Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music and Gaming. Here with me today is Dreadful Dan G. Hello.
Hiya. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. And how are you?
Yeah, good. Having a good week. Enjoying a bit of this Burn Cycle stuff. Haven't played the game, but been checking out some of the video footage to get acquainted. Although I understand you have played it and are a big fan.
Many a time, many a time. So yes, this week we're going to be talking about the classic. Is it a classic? Well, the old game. Which is Burn Cycle. So, Dan, tell me anything you know about Burn Cycle before I put this on the list? Was it anything? Have you ever heard of it before?
I'd never heard of it before.
Okay, that's good though. That's good. So looking at the initial stuff that I sent you and like the cover and all this, what did you think it was? Tell me about your process of researching this.
I thought, oh, here we go. It looks very much of its time. It looks, you know, it's that William Gibson Neuromancer sort of early 90s predicting the millennium and dystopic thought control, techno punks and cybercrime.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, and I think I hit the nail on the head, frankly.
Yes. You did, yeah. I mean, the front cover kind of says it all. So for people that don't know, Burn Cycle, and it has a little colon, and I'm not talking about a bumhole, but it has a little colon between Burn and Cycle. It's basically...
burn colon.
Burn your colon. Burn colon cycle. Well, if you look at the actual cover, it does look like a bumhole. So basically, this was one of... arguably the first good FMV game. Now, what is an FMV game? FMV is full motion video. So the difference being is that back when games started to use CDs, and people would be like, oh, like PlayStation and stuff like that. Yes, but PCs were basically the kind of first to do it. Philips were really pushing it. And this was kind of like the first one that kind of came out that people thought was actually quite decent. And I would agree with that. So it was released in, I believe, 1994. And then it came out, for the CDI.
Yeah, the CDI. Yeah. I don't remember that at all. Did you remember that?
Yeah,
do you know anyone that had one?
No, I don't know. No, we don't. I mean, because we knew each other back then, but as in, like, I don't think we knew anyone that had a CDI.
No.
But it was a kind of, you know, blink and you miss it thing.
I bet it was really expensive. Yeah, 94 was still Mega Drive and SNES.
Yeah. Well, this was when PlayStation said, it got caught. Basically what happened, especially with like these kind of things, is that stuff like the CDI, and there were a couple of others as well, like Sega Saturn as well, I think it came out for Sega Saturn, basically got completely fucked by the PlayStation.
When did the PlayStation launch in the UK? I thought it was a bit later than that. I thought it was like 96.
Yeah, I think it was 96. I think it was 96.
So this is kind of a bit ahead of the curve. I imagine this was expensive.
It was 95 here. 94 in Japan, 95 here, because obviously we had that for a while there. This might be news to all like the young kids, but like stuff would always get released in Japan and then America and then Europe usually, which meant you always had like, you always knew someone who had gone to Japan and got like a PlayStation 2 first or a PlayStation first or whatever. Or you could pay like the import fees, and sometimes you could find some at the back of magazines and pay like basically double to get like a Japanese game or Japanese whatever you needed. But so it didn't all come out at the same time. I mean, it still doesn't really, but it's days now as opposed to months is what it used to be. But yeah, the CDI, so it came out for that. It was basically the first kind of fairly decent game for it. And it did come out on PC, which is how I played it later on. And apparently it did, apparently it did get a port to Saturn and PlayStation, but I don't remember that at all, but fine.
I think they weren't released. I think they went through some of the production. It didn't come out.
That's right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm just reading that now. Actually, they were never released. But that makes sense because, this was, this is a kind of well-received-ish game. And so the idea, if people don't know, Full Motion Video, FMVs, basically, because the CDs and the space it allowed you to do, you could actually film real people. You could actually film real people and put them against like different backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And it had never been done quite like this before. And for people like me as a kid, it was like you were playing a movie.
Yeah.
And that was great. And there's been a lot of, I guess like some of the famous ones are Night Trap, for instance. That's probably the most famous early FMV game, but it's notoriously awful. And then you've got like weird stuff like Harvester. People might have seen that I started playing Harvester on Twitch and then haven't really touched my Twitch channel for a while. But yeah, Harvester is another one, and that's really good. I think, Dan, you'd love Harvester. You can get it for like £3 or something on Steam.
I like the Harvester, so.
The restaurant, the chain of restaurants. It's a little bit different from that. Imagine a really fucked up Twin Peaks, if you can imagine that. It's even more fucked up. The main guy is a paedophile as well.
Even better.
Yeah, wasn't at the time.
Ticking all my boxes. Well,
it was at the time. Yeah, but anyway, so this was FMV. So that's what that was. Burn Cycle. As I said, I played it on PC. It came with my PC. If I remember, like when my stepdad bought it home, you used to get like whatever, like three or four games or whatever. You know, I don't know what the fuck these are. One of them was Burn Cycle. And I was like, oh, it's interesting because the cover is very 90s. So it's very like hackers and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's got like a guy, Soul Cutter is his name, which is like absolutely, it's just on the nose kind of name there. It's got like his face and he's like, because his brain's getting imploded or whatever. And then it's kind of got like a computer version of him and a real version of him at side. It's got people with guns and all this. It looks very like sci-fi. And as you said, like cyberpunk and all that stuff. And it's completely that.
A bit Lawnmower Man.
Exactly. Yeah. Lawnmower Man. Exactly. And all that. So that was, I played this when I was a kid. I will probably say close to like 40 times or something ridiculous. Well, the thing is that the whole kind of point of the game, and I'll get onto this, is that you have to complete it within 2 hours or it's game over. So you can do it in one sitting. It's not like a big deal. And I used to like try different things and, you know, play around with bits and pieces or whatever. But once you know the sequence of events that you have to do, you know, you can just go through it super quick.
So that leads me to an initial question, because... Mm-hmm. The video on YouTube where someone's put all the cutscenes together is approximately an hour and 20 minutes.
Right.
So you're saying there's only actually 40 minutes of actual decision-making and gameplay?
No, I would say it's still... I don't think that'll be all the cutscenes. I don't think the cutscenes will be an hour and 20 minutes.
Maybe they're playing it as well.
Yeah, so it's like the actual gameplay is... there's a lot of puzzles, a lot of working out puzzles, and a lot of like clicking stuff. There is kind of shooting sequences, but you just have to click your mouse on the person as he comes up and you shoot him, basically. So gameplay wise, it is super easy. And that's one of the things I quite like about it, is that it kind of mixes it up a bit between like shoot these things. Like you've got these meteors as well. When you're in your spaceship, you shoot the meteors, and then it goes to like puzzles, which I think are actually pretty good. Like some are pretty simple, some are actually a bit more complicated, and I quite like the puzzle aspect of it, because each one feels a little bit different. It's not like, you know, a fucking lockpick thing in whatever, any of those games, which none of which I can remember now, where it's like, oh, okay, you have to do like the same, like Fallout, I think it does it, you're doing the same mini game each every time, like fucking okay, it's been like 100 times I've had to do the same thing. With these, they're all like quite different in terms of the puzzles, and there's a lot of just clicking to like walk around places, and then it will go to like a cutscene and stuff. So you're not like physically, it's just click and point basically adventure. You're not actually like doing too much. So this was a British game, I believe, and it stars as Soul Cutter, it stars this guy called Aaron Swartz. Now for those I'm going to basically call him out, because Aaron Swartz was going to be on the show, and he was up for it, and we were going to talk to him and ask him loads of questions about this, because I was so excited, because I played Burn Cycle a million times. As I said, there's not much information out there about anything to do with it, really, not that I could find. So this was going to be quite cool to kind of go over this stuff with what was I felt was like a classic game. And then at the last second, he ditched us and said he didn't want to do it anymore and has basically ghosted us.
What did you say to him, Sam?
I said, look, don't be a cunt.
No, before then, to offend him so much.
I said, hello, cunt. Cunter, soul cunter. That's your name, isn't it?
How did he go from being so game to just doing a complete
U-turn? He probably listened. It's the podcast. What the fuck? Yeah, so he was completely... I reached out to... there's a character called Gaia, whatever. Abigail Cunton, as I call her. It's Abigail Cunton. Just making another cunt joke. I'm using the word cunt way too much. But she was an actress. I reached out to her. She blocked me. So that went really well. I tried to get in touch with the director, this guy called Eitan Arusi. He went on to do a few shorts. He did a horror film. I can't remember what it's called. It's supposed to be awful. And I don't know what he does now, but couldn't get hold of him either. So it was a bit of a difficult process, but I thought, let's cover it anyway. I'm going to have to give up on the chase to get anyone who's got some insider info. But if anyone is listening to this and has any information, send it in, because I'm genuinely interested in the story behind this, because it's a strange story. It's a strange game to be made. Everything about it is just a bit weird. And it's so 90s. And it feels all like you can tell when you look at the production value, it looks cheap and yet amazing at the same time. And that's what I love about it.
It really is a time capsule, isn't it? Just visually.
Yeah.
And it's in the content as well, actually. Like the dialogue and the storyline. Like they're really cheesy, actually, like looking at it now. But it was probably really exciting at the time.
Yeah, and that was exactly FMV for a start. And also like 90 minutes and you're done. Like it's not hanging around. Like you can get through it, I mean, or 2 hours, whatever, but then you're out. I never died or anything in it ever. And I actually looked up, because you can die. You can get shot. The time could be up. The 2 hour thing could be up and you explode. Brain explodes, I guess. And I had to look at all these different things, different endings, and look them up because I genuinely thought, you know how we were talking about Senua's Sacrifice not too long ago?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, if the thing goes up into your head, then it's game over. No, you know, can't go back to your save. And I wasn't sure if that's real or not. Still not, to be honest. And I thought it might have been the same here in a sense of like, it's telling you you've got 2 hours, but whatever, doesn't care. It's nicely timing it. Apparently it does. Apparently it does time it and you need to do it in that time.
Good. So, I like rules. I like when rules are followed through.
Exactly. It's weird, isn't it? So I think, let's take a quick break and then we'll come on to the actual story because that's where the meat and the juice lie. And I have absolutely no fucking idea what happens. So,
but you love juice.
But I loved it. I loved the juiciness. Let's take a break and come back.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, so basically the story is you play Soul Cutter, you are some kind of tech thief, you get some kind of virus in your head, and you've got 2 hours to get it out, otherwise it will erase your memory and essentially kill you.
That's a pretty cool setup, actually. Like for that's a cool setup for a noir, and this is kind of like a neo-noir, isn't it?
Yep.
In fact, that is the setup for the film DOA, which is a classic 1930s film noir. So
got a 2 hour thing virus in his head.
Not a virus. Someone poisons him.
Oh.
And he's basically got 24 hours to find out who his murderer that is solid, actually. That's a solid start already. I like that.
Yeah, it's good. So the idea is that you're like, I need to get this out of my head. And then obviously other things like crop up. But that's kind of the framework of the whole thing. You meet different characters, you try and figure it out. But at the same time, you're getting like flashbacks. It's starting to like go through your memories as it's like you're finding it hard to remember stuff. And there's some kind of thing that's happened that you're trying to remember. And then basically it ends up with you being in the computer world and you meet essentially the equivalent of Tyrell from Blade Runner. And then you go back to the real world, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll kind of get to that, I guess. As I said, Wes, its influence is very, very much on its sleeve. Blade Runner is obviously a big one, but it's got all that 90s tech stuff. So you're looking at, I don't think, Johnny Mnemonic, maybe that was out around him this time. Hackers, for sure. What else was that kind of like cyber, you remember Cyber Dog in Camden? I think
that's yeah.
God knows. It's all that kind of vibe, especially because if that time, like me and Daniel know, specifically with Cyber Dog and all this stuff, that kind of raving outfit look where it's like really bright neon colors and wearing weird plastic rubber stuff or whatever, that was kind of the thing. So you can see why this looks as it did, because it's very much of that London was supposedly alternative kind of weird tech dance scene, I guess.
Totally, yeah. It's also got a bit of Max Headroom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different, and that is a bit odd. So I guess it's why it's quite a nice little fit for this. But yeah, what else would you say it kind of looks like visually? I was trying to think. It's like, I don't want to, it's not like Matrix, obviously, because that's all like dark and everything, but that.
Yeah, that's a bit later as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, this is still kind of clunky. Do you remember that TV show, Reboot?
No.
That was on around this time. And that was all this sort of like quite early animated graphics. It was all taking place inside like a computer chip.
Right. That's interesting. I don't remember that. But yeah, Lawnmower Man, I suppose, is a good one. But that kind of really bright, weird thing. And it's trying to be a noir. It's trying to be like how Blade
Runner is noir.
Yeah, neo noir.
Everything's got like purple and pink.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly that. But Soul Cutter is kind of like wearing essentially black and red. So he's like Mr. Cool, I guess. So I'm going to try and go through the story as much as possible. But I'm going to be honest, it's ridiculous. And it's blatantly written by someone who like was watching, I don't know, like Tarantino stuff or like crime movies, and as well as like sci-fi stuff, like trying to make it like gritty and dramatic and all this.
Nice.
Yeah, which is quite interesting.
Good ambitions to have. Exactly. Let's see how successful they were.
Yeah. So it starts off, what I liked about it is that it starts off straight from when you get the virus. So there's no real lead up to like you fucking like, okay, we're going to do this crime. My name's Soul Cutter, and now, you know, and I've been put on this job or whatever. You're just straight in, poof, you've got this like virus in your head. And then straight away it's like, oh, you've got to escape. You're like, oh God, my head hurts or whatever. So there's a little bit of a shootout scene as you're trying to like get out and you plant a bomb. And then Chris, who's like your mate, essentially you're on the thing on this crime with, she gets shot. And there's like a big kind of death scene. You're like, oh my God. So anyway, you get out of there and then you're like, oh, I've got this burn cycle virus in my head. It's going to kill me in 2 hours or whatever. I'm going to have to figure out what I have to do. So you land basically on this, like in this cityscape where there's no one on the streets, and all that stuff just looks fucking weird as well. And this is kind of the main problem I had when playing the game, is that you have to like click your button to change your viewpoint to go into places.
Okay.
And you can easily get lost because it's not fucking clear where you're clicking or how you get to certain places. And that's my main criticism, is that I remember specifically the first time I played it, I was fucking about for so long because I was just like, I don't know what I was, but I've gone everywhere. And basically, because I didn't click on a specific part of like one screen, I didn't realize that there was like an alley or whatever that you could actually look at and go down, because it's just not, it's just so clunky in that way. So that's like a kind of big criticism I had to start with it. But anyway, you land, you realize you need more power for your vehicle, you need the money, it's all this stuff. So you've kind of got a bunch of like little puzzles and quests and all this. You go and get some money from the bank and you upload part of the stuff, and they're like, oh, you've got this virus, you need to kind of go get that sorted out. So it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, okay, fine. So he meets this guy, and this always made me feel weird. He meets this guy called Zip, I think is his name. And basically he's the druggie. So the idea is that his drug is like virtual experiences or whatever. So like artificial highs. So
I wondered if this would come into it, because the whole time I've been sitting here thinking about that, I don't know what it's called, Juliette Lewis film, and Ralph Fiennes,
Strange
Turn
Days.
Of the Millennium. Yeah.
Strange Days, yeah.
Exactly. And that's all that, like, trading in memories and, like, it's a drug.
That's right, yeah. You are able to record your experiences and the mental... that's really good. I love that film. Just
I really like it as well. It.
It's like... Yeah, it's like the thrill of killing someone or whatever, and someone's basically like putting these snuff movies out and sharing them around, and everyone's getting a high off these people, which is really fucking weird.
But this game predates that film, doesn't it?
It would be pretty close. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think Strange Days might have been 96, 97.
Yeah. You keep talking, I'll look it up.
Yeah, and...
95,
okay, well, there you go. So yeah, it would have been just afterwards, I guess, kind of doing it at the same time. Yeah, this Zip guy, he talks like Noel Fielding a little bit. Hey, Cutter, how you doing, man? Yes, I've got, and it's not me doing a Noel Fielding impression, that's me trying to do the Zip, but it's that kind of like weird articulation, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, I was always listening to it going, God, it's such a, what, he says it so weirdly. But yeah, so basically you've got to give something to him and he'll give something to you, and it becomes like a series of MacGuffins, basically, for you to kind of get one power to your car so you can get off this place, and also figure out how you're going to get this thing out of your head. So you take part in like a competition where you're like throwing, and this bit always confused me and I still don't remember how to do it, but there's kind of like a battle arena between two people, and the idea is that you're projecting symbols and you're trying to beat the other person. I think the other, it's like a battle to the death almost. I think they die or something, or their mind goes funny if they lose. So anyway, you've got to kind of, and I always remember this because I never specifically remember what I'm trying to do, but you're trying to like click on a certain symbol to beat the other person. Anyway, once you've beaten that, you get a prize, you go to the bar, you get something that he wants, blah, 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 blah. So you've got the secrets of events. And you basically find, as you're kind of walking around, you also find this woman who is Gaia, I think is her name. Now, in my head, as I remember it, she was just some like basically prostitute who is a bit like kick-ass or has some like military experience. And you're just like, oh, okay, you kind of hire her to help you get into this, to get into your hotel, I think it is, so that you can go get your stuff and get back out. But I've read since that she's actually like, she's like an old acquaintance of his, and he's how, she doesn't recognize him because he's had his face altered when he was undercover or something weird. But I don't remember ever that coming across clearly when I played the game, but yeah, whatever. So you go.
Maybe someone listening will know what was going on there in that little subplot.
Yeah, I mean, if you could probably go through the cutscenes and find out for yourself, I guess, if I was that bothered. But so essentially you go into your hotel room, you get your belongings, you get some other bits and pieces, whatever, then it gets raided and you're able to escape, blah, blah, blah. So basically all that stuff kind of happens. But what's cool about this bit is that you see like, all like the stuff at the bar, and there's like these kind of like 2D cutouts of like real people who are supposed to be like standing there clubbing, and it's just, some of them are just fucking awful, but it's quite funny. And you've got like it's like supposed to be like some kind of like robot human, and it's just like, he's just got this like black suit, he's just got like fucking like plumbing pipes or whatever just coming from, it's like some shit red dwarf or something like that, like villain, which is quite funny. So that's all quite cool, quite nice. So anyway, you get away. She double crosses you and all this stuff. She's like the, you know, the femme fatale, as it were. And I fancy the pants off her. I remember that, like everything about her. I just remember being like, as a kid, just being like, she's hot. Even though she's not wearing anything particularly revealing at all. She's got like a bit of thigh on show, but that's about it. But I
she's edgy. That whole edgy thing. And cool.
Exactly. I enjoyed it all.
You know, so, these kind of characters.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to go off on a bit of a tangent. Yeah. Like, this is 94, and this is like the heyday, peak of these kind of characters. These like strong, edgy, female, like techno hacker type characters, right?
I guess, I mean, yeah.
She's not unique. That's kind of like a bit of a trope, wouldn't you say, around this time?
Yeah, I know. It wasn't unique, not particularly.
Yeah.
I mean, the femme fatale obviously isn't unique at all. But yeah, having like this double crossing, like, you know, sexy, as you said, like tech based.
Yeah. And this is like mid 90s, right? So then I ended up then working and publishing, and
here we go.
We had all the big girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yes, yes.
And that's like 2009.
Yeah.
Same and character. I'd hear every fucking day, oh, it's so good, Stieg Larsson. You see, he's created this amazing character. She's so unique. Lisbeth Salander.
Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding? It's like so old hat and naff.
Yeah.
Because she's got a tattoo and she can hack into computers. And she beats up a man. I was like, oh my God. Like these sad old farts that I work with, like, wow, so exciting. Never seen a woman like it.
Yeah, it is weird because, yeah, well, with her character in particular, I mean, I really liked, I mean, to be fair, I've not read the books, but I liked the American and the Swedish films, I guess. I didn't really like the American films that much apart from the first one, but the Swedish films I quite enjoyed, but... yeah, it's not. Yeah, I wasn't watching that thinking, oh, she's new. Like, cool. Like, to be honest, it's like, it's the same as like Trinity from Matrix. It's like,
yeah,
it's, you know, that's, and that was what, 15 years before, yeah, or something. It's like,
yeah,
it's not that crazy. But yeah, it's all cyclical, isn't it? I suppose. Things like this, people think it's new and edgy when it's like, well, just kind of rehashing the same ground.
So I think he was just like a sort of middle-aged man who got off on this kind of thing. Burncycle. He probably played Burncycle. He's probably like you. He's probably like this character getting all excited, stayed in his head.
Yeah.
And he's written this sort of weird sort of fantasy about that character getting turned on by another sad middle-aged sort of like journalist.
True. Who knows? The burn cycle continues.
Yeah.
Never ends.
Anyway.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, kind of getting to the crux of it now. So all that happens in like the first hour or so. And then you get to this brain doctor guy and he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So basically you're going to die pretty much. So you have to get in there. So what we're going to do is put you into like the tech world. Your body's going to stay here. You're just going to be uploaded there. And he's like, well, how do I get back? He's like, oh, you're going to have to find like Vittel or whatever his name is, who's the, you know, who's like essentially the Tyrell of, Vieli, that's it, essentially the Tyrell of this world. And he'll sort you out. Apparently he's got like an upload code. So he's like, okay, fine. Meanwhile, he's getting all these flashbacks of some fat guy in a mustache, killing these guys in front of him when he like worked for the company that he stole from or something. So the idea is that, yeah, he is stealing from this company that he used to work for. Don't know who this guy is that's killing people. Don't really know why he's killing anyone, but I don't know. There seems to be some kind of drama there. And then he goes into like this tech world, and there's bits of him missing. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, it's because my software is shit. So you have to go get him back. Then you've got this weird sequence in like the tech world where he has to do like a variety of these puzzles to get his like parts of his back, himself back. And it's quite funny because they're just like, it's just static when he's like walking around. But one of the pieces is like supposed to be like a version of him, and it's other like, it's like a member of Bros or something. It's like leather jacket and he's trying to be hard. It's just some like lanky guy who looks nothing like him. It's like, if it's supposed to be like a representation of him, why not make it him again? Like, why are you using someone else? And it's
that's
like,
strange.
It's like his own guilt. He's trying to deal with his own guilt because Chris died. And then Chris, who's the woman at the beginning, she's like in there, but she's virtual and all this, blah, 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 blah. So you go through all this stuff, you get your bits back, and then you go meet Vieli. Vieli's like, yeah, cool. You know, this is what you need to kind of get rid of the burn cycle. She's like, okay, cheers. So you do this little puzzle, burn cycle's gone. Great. Okay, you're not going to die anymore. And he's like, okay, yeah, now listen, outside, and then, like the guy with the big fat guy with the mustache is now like, hey, bring out that code or I'm going to kill you. And it's like, okay, so you find out that basically the idea was that he was hired by that guy who was his old boss to go back to that company, steal something, which would turn out to be the burn cycle virus implanted in him on purpose, so that he would have to go to this tech world to find Vielli so that he could kill Vielli with this virus, or get this upload code, which Vielli has mastered, because essentially it's the key to immortality, because you can download your consciousness and re-upload it to anybody that you want. So you could basically live forever. It kind of does away with the idea of like the soul cutter, because it's like, it's just that whole classic thing of like, you, whoever you are and whatever you are, is just a bunch of information. So we download that. We can upload it anyway. So that's what they want.
I like it as a plan, because actually I'm sure he could have achieved this through far simpler means.
Yeah.
But I do like a schema.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a long scheme. And it's that kind of thing where you're just like, why did he not make it easier then for him to like get to this point in the first place? But anyway, so Vielli's like, yeah, so they want my code, but we're not going to let that happen. So what I'm going to do is upload you into like this really hot woman's body. And she's a pleasure model, classic kind of fucking misogynistic, objectification of women there. Go into this hot woman's body, and then what I want you to do is steal my head, literally my head, because it's got the upload code in it, and then let me know. So anyway, you get uploaded, you get into this woman's body, then there's another shootout scene when all these guys are after you, and you see your like slumped male body just like there, and you can't get the head out. You don't try very hard. All you're trying to do is like put it through a window, and she basically is like, fuck it, and she climbs out and escapes. And then she's like, yeah, sorry, Vielli. She's talking to like the tech world now, even though she's in the real world. Like, sorry, Vielli, on like a monitor thing. I left your head there. And he's like, I knew you would leave my head there. So that's why there's a virus in it. And now they're going to upload it, and it's going to destroy everything. And she's like, oh, okay, lucky. Cool. All right. And then the whole of like this massive corporation, you just see all these screens shutting down, and she just rides off into the distance. I think the last line is something like, I love my new body. I wonder what it'll look like with an all-over tan. It's like he's just perving on himself now in a weird metaphysical way. And that's it. So it's really weird. It's like everything just led up. Everything like weirdly led up to the scene where it's like it was expected that he wouldn't escape with the head. And that was the plan, I guess.
That is a twist. That is writing, my friend.
That is pure writing. Not sure what it's writing, but it's writing something. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just like, it's just to have people pointing guns at each other, say some stupid lines, get onto like another bit of action, and you know, it's trying to mix things up a bit. But I never paid too much attention to it. I just liked the idea that it was like people on screen, like a moving thing. And for me, it was a precursor to like the fact that you get all these amazing graphics today. Just bear in mind that exactly as she said, like at this point you had like fucking Mega Drive and like sprites on, which is cool in its own thing, but nothing like that. I'd hadn't seen or done anything like that before.
Yeah. Very different, very different. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, you know, I think we found this guy's blog online.
Oh yeah.
Chap called Rich Johnston, who I don't believe is credited in the game. So we'll have to take him at his word.
Right.
But he claims he wrote some of the dialogue for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, in that regard, it was dashed off basically in one afternoon.
Right.
He was invited by the actual writer, Eaton. I think he said his name was at the beginning.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Something like that, yeah.
Eaton Mess.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they just kind of rattled it off. And he said, you know, reviewing it recently, it just made him laugh. But really, like, it's more about, like you said, that vibe, the atmosphere, yeah, and some of the kind of like concepts, all these kind of big silly ideas. He's kind of said, you know, it's corporate warfare, existential darkness, some metaphysical stuff. And just bits and bobs of what was floating around in like mainstream dystopic science fiction. So yeah, all the kind of the specifics of the storyline and the dialogue and everything. It's forgivable.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like a weird thing to recommend because it's so quick and there's so much in there, but it is genuinely fun. The puzzles are really fun as well, like, because that is the main bulk of the game, is watching stuff and then doing little puzzles. But I genuinely found it really interesting. And I just like that whole like early 3D render
kind
of look. It just looks weirdly like stark and like, I don't know, it's just something about it which looks quite, the fact that it's not like, you know, you're walking around these big buildings and it's like you're in that, it's like you're in another world, but like a really horrible, because everything's like black basically. It's like, it's like a weird hellscape almost, and it's supposed to look all cool and stuff when it actually looks really, it's not like a bright fuzzy future, it's this like horrible like pitch black dark thing. It's weird. Such a weird game, but it's something that, I don't know, by the sounds of it, would you think that, would this appeal to you? Would this have appealed to you back then? Had you seen it? And would it appeal to you now?
I remember seeing clips of FMVs on like Games Master,
right,
or whatever was on TV, Bad Influence, and thinking they looked quite exciting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think I was a bit scared. I don't know. It all looked like, because all these games were kind of a bit like darker, and to be honest, I think I got flashback for the Mega Drive. Do you remember that game?
Yeah. Similar cover. Like,
yeah, it is, isn't it? And that's kind of a little bit, it hasn't got a video footage in it, but it's a similar kind of concept and storyline.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, this isn't for me. And I took it back and I traded it in for Tailspin.
Just genuinely a great game.
Yeah. Those Disney Mega Drive games are all top notch.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the mindset I was in around 1994.
Yeah.
I think I probably get more of a kick out of it now, because at the time I thought it was quite ugly, all of this.
Mm.
You know, it took them a while to get it right. And when the PlayStation came out, I hated it. And I hated all this, like, suddenly we're trying to do 3D graphics for everything.
Yeah.
But it's like any new emerging technology, it takes them a while to get to grips with it. Like, look at the early days of CGI.
Yeah.
How shit all of that looks.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think now I look back on it and I'm a bit more open to it, because it's got that weird nostalgia, and I like that it's a bit shitty.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about the CGI stuff, because I was watching Jurassic Park again for the first time in ages.
Oh, yeah.
And that still stands up because, for one thing, it's a mixture of models and CGI, but also, like, all the CGI stuff is either middle or like background, if that makes sense. So you don't have to worry too much about it.
Yeah.
Being too up close, that's where they used all the models and stuff for the most part. But also, like, it's mainly in the dark. So it's like, you cover it up really well by just having it in the back. Like, obviously there's like scenes, like the big, if you remember, like the Bronchosaurus, the first thing they see, da, 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 and all that. And like, yeah, that's
what, yeah, that looks good.
Yeah. And that still stands up to a degree. I mean, like, obviously it's kind of faded a bit now, but that was around this time. You think about it. And then you see like things like Event Horizon or whatever, which is 96, 97 and all, like the water and blood and stuff. And it's like, God, it's just like, it's like a cartoon on top of action. It's just so, like, Blade was another one. It's like, Jesus, Blade 2 was fucking atrocious. Some of the CGI in that.
I suppose it's like Jurassic Park had a big enough budget. They were like, let's get this right.
Yeah.
And then when they saw that it worked, all these other sort of like middling movies started trying to use it and doing it badly.
Yeah.
And then, well, of course, like the one that kind of stands out for me is Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Well, yeah, don't get me started on that. I'll be here forever. but yeah, like, well, Jurassic Park, we're going off on one now, not about Burn Cycle, but Jurassic Park was the film that basically, as you said, kind of kickstarted the CG revolution as such, because people were now Like, for instance, Peter Jackson started working on Lord of the Rings because he saw Jurassic Park and was like, okay, like, this is possible now. Like, we can do this kind of thing.
Wow.
And that's the same for, like, a lot of people. You know, and then, but that's the thing. It's like, it was used better back then when it was more, like, scarce. So when you see, like, that's why, like, the Phantom Menace and all that stuff. Well, to be fair, Phantom Menace, out of the three of them, was the most real of them. Like, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith is much more CG-based. But then you look at, like, something like, well, even Titanic, where that stands up to this day because, again, it was a mixture of all these different visual effects put together, not just CG. That's why it looks so great. But yeah, sorry, going off on one. Burn Cycle, you could definitely tell that it's all fucking real people against horrifically rendered 3D backgrounds.
That's the other thing about it as well, isn't it? I mean, the resolution must be pretty low. So even watching it, you know, I've been watching this footage on YouTube, and it's at like, what, 360? And it just looks really...
Probably.
I put it on the TV, it's all pixelated and shitty.
Yeah, remember, that's how it looked back then, remember?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, nothing much has changed from that.
That's part of the appeal as well, though.
Yeah, for sure.
How did they actually filmed it all? And this guy's saying, you know, it's all on blue screen. And maybe think about that, actually. I don't even know why we went from blue screen to green screen.
You know what? I don't actually know why either. Because, yeah, when you look at, like, Phantom Menace and stuff, like, most of that's, if not all of it, it's on blue screen. I think maybe it's just people were less likely to wear green. Maybe because it's a brighter colour as well, so it might be easier to key out as it progressed rather than blue. But I don't actually, I'm not 100% sure.
And blue screen was part of the lexicon back then. Now people never say it anymore.
Oh yeah, it's green screen now. God, you'd be laughed out of the wherever you are. You start talking about blue screens. But yeah, so anyway, I guess that's Burn Cycle. Just a nice little chat about it. There's no real nuggets of information there, but which is a shame. You can blame that on Soul Cutter, Mr. Aaron Swartz himself. He's not going to talk to me again anyway. Probably won't even be listening to this. Which is a shame.
There's one aspect that we haven't spoken about.
Go on.
The music.
Oh, the music. Well, yeah, this was supposed to be the first video game that used orchestral music. And part of that is because, obviously, it being one of the first CD games, it was one of the first that was possible to have proper music on, which is part of the appeal of CDs in the first place.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And that's, to be honest, I quite like the music. It's of its time, obviously, but I quite like it.
Apparently, this chap, Simon Boswell, he's called, actually worked on some really cool stuff. Apparently he's done some soundtracks for a few Argento films.
Like what? Which ones?
Not sure. Some giallos.
Okay.
Not Suspiria and Inferno and all that.
Right.
Apparently also, I never know how to pronounce this guy's name, Alejandro Jodorowsky?
Right.
Or is it Jodorowsky? He's done weird acid trippy Mexican films.
Okay.
What's his big one called? I think it translates to like The Mole or something. But he did a film called Santa Sangre, and that's what this guy did the score for.
Oh.
Some Clive Barker stuff, Lord of Illusions.
Okay. Yep.
Shallow Grave and Hackers.
Oh yeah, with
well, so go. There you go. Yeah, right there. That's probably why he got commissioned for this.
Apparently, about
5-6 years ago, he was going to be doing like a performance of some of his scores in concert.
Yeah.
So he was touting this would be part of that show.
Was it? So it's come.
Who knows?
Who knows? Well, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty, I quite like it, but yeah, it's very this pure, fits the tone perfectly, put it that way. So yeah, I guess for anyone who wants to see it in action, I think check it out. I have no idea where you can get it, to be honest. So good luck to you if you do manage to find it. Again, you can play it in an hour and a half, couple of hours. Yeah, it's weird. If you like your Blade Runner, you like your cyberpunk, and you know, that's still cool now. People are still into cyberpunk. I mean, literally, you've got the Cyberpunk 2077 game out. This is the original, put it that way, and it runs better. So yeah, it's worth having a look, I think, anyway, because I thought it was pretty great back in the day.
The soundtrack,
yeah,
has been remastered and reissued online in FLAC format back in 2017.
Smell my cheese. That's great.
So you can hear it in its full glorious form if you don't want to try and find a CD-ROM that will work with your operating system.
Bloody brilliant news. I might go and crank some of that out. God, I do love Burn Cycle. Yeah. Okay, that's kind of it, really. I don't really know what else there's to say about it. It's just one of those things.
It's just a forgotten cult classic, it appears, but it's forgotten because none of the people involved in it want to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's like strangely, you know, reserved about it when I thought, I think it's a pretty decent game. Cool. Well, yeah, if you've played it or you've got any information or whatever, then yeah, let us know, because I want to hear more about it, and maybe we'll, talk about it again in the future if we get some nice, juicy information. But yeah, it's a shame, Aaron Swartz. I really liked his character here. I don't know what he went on to do. He must have done some other bits and pieces, but this, for me, he will always be Mr. Soul Cutter.
God rest his soul.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All right. Well, that's it for this week. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye, everyone.
All right.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening, and see you again soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.